So I've had the privilege of knowing two Bruce Allisons. That's two different people by the name Bruce Allison. One is an arborist, a tree specialist, and the other is a specialist on all different branches of mathematics, especially non-associative algebras. But only one of them I've known from BC. That's the time before extended affine Lie algebras, before root-graded Lie algebras, even before Kac-Moody Lie algebras. It dates from the time that George Seligman, who was Bruce's advisor, was looking at finite-dimensional simple Lie algebras that contained a maximal split subalgebra. And Bruce made some very important contributions to the study of those of relative rank one. And this inspired our work with Bruce and Yun Gao on BCR-graded Lie algebras and with Oleg. And having been there and done that, I'm convinced that relative rank one should be relatively easy, but it's really relatively difficult. In fact, it's probably the most difficult case. So Bruce has made some really important contributions there. And the work I'm going to talk about today, you'll see Bruce's hand in a lot of it. So it's probably more than everything you want to know about centroids. I hope it's not more than anything you want to know about. Okay. So let me just give you a little background. Fortunately, we've had a lot of talks on this so far. So the centroid is just the transformations that commute with the multiplication operators. So phi of AB is A phi of B, or you can pull B up the other side. And we've seen that they're very useful to construct derivations, and they're very useful for studying forms of algebras. So if you know that the centroid is just the scalar multiples of the field and your algebra is simple, then you know it remains simple as you extend the field, the scalars. So in associative theory, it's been very useful for doing things like studying the Brouwer group and division algebras and things like that. I don't know if it would help to turn off the lights, or at least the front lights. Would that help? Is it hard to see back there a little bit? Maybe. Okay. So I'm going to begin with a helpful little lemma that comes from our work with Erhard. And it says that if you take any algebra over a field F and you take an ideal which is invariant under the centroid, and that ideal has trivial centroid itself, then the centroid of A is just multiples of the identity plus the elements of the centroid that restrict and give you 0 on B. And this is very easy to show. In fact, you probably see what the proof is that if you take an element of the centroid and you can restrict it to an element of that ideal, the centroid of that ideal, where it's just a multiple of the identity. And so if you subtract off a multiple of the identity, you get something in the right-hand side, something that annihilates the ideal. And because it's annihilating this ideal B, you can write it, the centroid, in the following way. You have an induced action on A mod B, and then you can think of these elements that you're getting, the ones that aren't multiples of the identity, as homomorphisms that are A mod B module homomorphisms from A mod B to the annihilator of B in A. And we're regarding the annihilator as an A mod B module under this induced action. So it sort of reduces the computations to looking at these quotients, and that's often really quite helpful. So My major focus today is on the centroid of a Lie algebra, and this is what the definition reduces to here. It's just, in fact, they're just L-module homomorphisms from L into L. And why am I interested in the centroid? Well, our motivation for what we were investigating were extended affine Lie algebras, and as defined by Allison, Azam, Berman, Gao, Pianzola, originally. And what we saw in the last talk was that the centroid is non-degenerately paired with the center. So the center is what Maribel was talking about, the graded dual of D, and then the centroid is related to those skew centroidal derivations. So if you think about trying to construct extended affine Lie algebras, you can put a lot into the center, but then you have to pay the price over on the left-hand side and put some things into the centroid to balance it, because you need a non-degenerate pairing to have an extended affine algebra. So the question is, you know, exactly what are these spaces and what can you say? So there's a little bit of a balancing act going on between the center and the centroid. So that was our original motivation for doing the work that we did. So in our joint work with Erhard, that's the number of the work, not the number of our works. Okay, so it's on the archive if you want to look at the paper. We described the centroid of Lie algebras with a toral subalgebra, and from that you can deduce fairly easily what goes on for Kac-Moody Lie algebras, and then extended affine Lie algebras, root-graded Lie algebras, and then loop-like Lie algebras. So this is what I'm sort of hoping to talk about today. So let me begin with just the first case, Lie algebras with a toral subalgebra. We saw this type of thing going on in the extended affine case. So we have this abelian subalgebra, and it's breaking up our Lie algebra into what you could call weight spaces, common eigenspaces, root spaces, whatever you would like to call them. And if you have an element of the centroid, then because it commutes with add of the elements of the toral subalgebra, it's going to map these spaces to themselves. And it's going to take this toral subalgebra to the center of the zero eigenspace. So a useful theorem in this context is the following. Suppose you take an ideal which is invariant under the centroid, and it intersected with one of these eigenspaces or root spaces, has dimension 1, and it generates this ideal. Then the first part of this theorem is just saying that when you restrict an element of the centroid to this ideal, you get scalar multiple of the identity. And that's not difficult to see because what? It preserves this one-dimensional space, so it acts as a scalar multiple on that. And then if your whole algebra is generated by that one-dimensional space, and you're having commuting action with the multiplications, then it has to act as a scalar multiple of the identity on B. And then from our helpful little lemma, it'll follow that the centroid is just multiples of the identity, homomorphisms of L mod B into, well, here the annihilator is just the centralizer of B and L. Okay. So that's what things would reduce to in that case. So here's an application of the result. suppose you take a Kac-Moody-Lie algebra with an indecomposable Cartan matrix. So it has generators and relations that come from the Cartan matrix. And the point is that if you set B equal to the derived ideal, then it intersects the root space that corresponds to one of these generators. In fact, you could take any EI, any SI, all those spaces are just one-dimensional. You have exactly the setup of that result. And so what that result should tell us then is that what? The centroid then of any Kac-Moody algebra is just multiples of the identity, and then homomorphisms from GMod, the derived algebra, which is abelian, and that's why the field is coming up there, because of this abelianness, and then the centralizer of G in G of the derived algebra. You don't have to do anything with generators and relations. You know, it's just very quick. So some special cases of this: if your Cartan matrix is invertible, then G is equal to the derived algebra, and so here the centroid would just be trivial. So one case of this is if you have a finite Cartan matrix, this happens. There are a lot easier ways to do things in that case. So here's another case that is of interest, is if you look at the affine Lie algebras, then they're equal to their derived algebra plus a one-dimensional extension. This D you can think of as a degree derivation. It just acts on the polynomial part when you do the commutator and gives you whatever the polynomial, the degree of it is. Okay. And so in this case, the derived algebra is just this G tensor, the Laurent polynomials, the loop algebra, plus the one-dimensional center. So the centroid is just very easy to describe. It's two-dimensional. Okay. So let me talk a little bit about group-graded Lie algebras with a little more structure. So this is, again, like we saw in the last talk, we have a Lie algebra generated by a group, graded by a group. And I'm just going to assume that the group is generated by the spaces, the labels that are giving me non-zero spaces. That's really not an assumption, because if that's not true, just replace the group by the subgroup that is generated by it. Okay. So I'm also going to assume I have a non-degenerate symmetric invariant bilinear form on L. And this is mentioned also in the last talk, we have these skew derivations. So these are derivations that are skew symmetric relative to the bilinear form that we have. And then I'm going to look at kind of a graded version of this. So these are skew derivations that have the lambda up on top, and that just means that it'll map the mu weight space here, the mu group graded space, to the lambda plus mu graded space. So we have kind of graded skew derivations. Take a graded subspace of this. So that just means you're taking certain subspaces of these graded spaces, and then take the graded dual. So component by component, take the graded, the dual of those spaces. So this was also mentioned in the last talk, but it had a D instead of an S. The organizers did a wonderful job of putting us in the right order. Or alphabetically, we were in the right order. but it didn't quite get the notation.
Thank you.
So I'm going to consider a map that I'll call sigma S from L cross L into this graded dual. And here's how it's defined. So it takes two elements of L, acts on something in S, and it's just the skew derivation applied to X with Y on the right-hand side. So if you're familiar with the way the things go on in the affine Lie algebra, this is exactly kind of mimicking that construction. And you can always then form the direct sum of these two spaces and put a product on it. You should think of this sigma S as a two cocycle that's giving a central extension. Okay. So this is a very general way of getting central extensions if you have a group graded algebra. Okay, so I'm interested in these algebras, and you'll see in a minute why I'm interested in them. So you can prove various things about them in general context. For example, the centroid inherits the grading, and the centroid will have zero unless you have the zero component of the grading. That's one thing. Other thing you can prove is that if K is a Lie torus, so this is mentioned briefly in the last talk, so Lie torus has all the structure we have. It has a grading by a finite root system and these double graded spaces, L, alpha, and lambda, are one dimensional and paired with their opposite, give a copy of SL2. So if you have all that structure, then the centroid is in fact trivial. Show that the centroid is trivial. Okay. So what motivated all this were, of course, extended affine Lie algebras and trying to compute the centroid here. And if you have a tame extended affine Lie algebra and K is the ideal generated by the root spaces corresponding to the anisotropic roots, so this is the core, this is EC from the last talk, it has exactly this structure, this L direct sum, this S part, and L is the core mod at center. The core is a Lie torus. This was originally developed, this notion, in the work of Yoshi, and further extended by Erhard Neher. And so you know that the core is a Lie torus, and so applying our helpful little lemma, right? This is the ideal you apply it to. It's invariant under the centroid. It has trivial centroid. And so the core, or the centroid of any extended affine Lie algebra is just this space. So notice here the tameness is saying that the centralizer in E of K is just in K itself. It's the center of K. So that's why the center is occurring over there. Okay, so let's go back and revisit the affine Lie algebras. What is being said here? Well, what's being said is that affine Lie algebras are extended affine Lie algebras. So if you want to think of them this way, the core is this part, these two pieces. And this is the part outside. So the core is the derived algebra. The center of the core is just scalar multiples of C. E mod the core is just D. So that result we just had, which was this, just boils down to that result. It's always reassuring to get the same result twice. Okay. So you should really think of this result about extended affine Lie algebras as generalizing this result that goes on in the affine case. Okay. Well, let me just mention what goes on for root-graded Lie algebras. So for root-graded Lie algebras, you have a finite root system. Possibly is non-reduced, and we'll say a Lie algebra of characteristic zero is graded by this finite root system if we have a split simple subalgebra called the grading subalgebra, and the Cartan subalgebra, the toral subalgebra of the split simple one, is acting as a toral subalgebra on all of L and decomposing L. We'll assume L0 is generated by the non-zero spaces. And then the root systems match up if you're not in BCR. Of course, you have trouble getting a split simple algebra of type BCR. So in that case, you assume delta G is either of type BR, CR, or DR. And this definition goes back to Berman and Moody in 1992 for the reduced case and to our memoir with Bruce and Jan for the BCR case. So, just need to know a little bit about the structure of these algebras. And just to save time, I'm just going to focus on the reduced case. Non-reduced case. Okay. On the not BCR case. Then I don't have to think which one it is. Okay. So what happens is, as a G module for G, you break the algebra up into direct sums of copies of G, copies of the trivial module, which is what D is, and then in the non-simply Lie case, you have copies of the module called the little adjoint module, which is got highest weight, the highest short root. And what happens is that you can put together these two things that are kind of coordinatizing your algebra into a coordinate algebra. And this algebra is of the types that you like to see come up. It's associative, alternative, Jordan, or structurable in some cases, depending upon the root system. So the trivial sum of the trivial modules here can be written as being generated by this coordinate algebra. And the way these things act is when you take something here, it acts on the right-hand components as derivation by the inner derivation. So what you should kind of get from this is that the structure of these Lie algebras is really dependent upon this coordinate algebra. It's kind of really depends on that. Here are a few examples, just the affines. So here we have to pass to the derived algebra, the affine, because of that assumption that L0 is generated by the non-zero root spaces. Toroidal, or the core of an extended affine Lie algebra. So those are just some examples. So here's what we showed about the centroid. The centroid is basically given by a certain set of elements that come from the coordinate algebra. So they live in the center of the coordinate algebra and in that part that's labeling the A, the G part. So what elements are they? Well, they're basically elements that you can pass from one side to the other in these, in the D part, this expression in the D part. And then you have a condition that basically says that the action is well defined. there. So what's the map? Well, the map is just basically multiply the right-hand components. So you have a certain set of elements in the coordinate algebra. The way they act to give elements of the centroid of the root-graded Lie algebra is just this multiplication on the right-hand side. Okay. And in the case when this D part is just the inner derivations, that's the case where L is centerless, then the centroid, in fact, is just the set of elements. You don't need these two conditions. So it's very easy to describe these things, and let me just tell you what it is in the affine case. So in affine, the algebra is re-revisited. What happens is that when you think of them as root-graded Lie algebras, this is the appearance that you have. This is what these pairing that goes into the D part. The D part here is just FC. And you have these elements that live in this center of the coordinate algebra. Well, the coordinate algebra is just Laurent polynomials, intersect A. Well, that is A. So it's just Laurent polynomials, and you have this extra condition. So you write an element Z out as a polynomial in T and T inverse, and you use this fact, and you get an identity like that, which says that the components of the polynomial have to all be zero except for P equals zero. Okay. So it's just a simple little computation. It says Z is in multiples of the identity, so the centroid of the derived algebra is just scalar multiples of the identity. Okay. So the last kind of algebras that we looked at were centroids of tensor products. So this is like Said was thinking about. And you can take two transformations and make it be a transformation on the tensor product. That's just what I mean by wiggle here. And if A is perfect and B is unital, then the centroid of A tensor the centroid of B is isomorphic to this space contained in the centroid of A tensor B. And if you also have some conditions on A, some further conditions, not writing quite as many conditions down as Said wrote down, but either your algebra is finitely generated as a multiplication module, or your centroid of A is just scalar multiples of the identity, then the centroid of the tensor product is the tensor product of the centroid. So basically, if you just have a few conditions on it, that you'll get this result that the centroid of the tensor product is the tensor product of the centroids. So I just want to mention that this was proved in a paper by Allison Berman Pianzola, and I don't know the number of this paper. Is it 2.5 or 2.75? 2.5. So they have papers 1, 2, 2.5, 2.75. This is from 2.5. They said that they proved a version of this when A is a finitely generated multi-module and B is a unital commutative associative algebra. So this result is sort of removing some of the hypotheses, especially the hypotheses on B. You don't need commutative and associative. Okay, just like to talk a few minutes about centroids and forms. As a corollary to the result I just put up, you can prove the following result. If you have a perfect algebra whose centroid is just multiples of the identity, and you have a unital commutative associative algebra, and you have a subalgebra of it. So you want to take a subalgebra of B such that B is a free C module, And the basis for B over C contains the unit element. Okay. Then when you take L and you tensor it over C with B, you assume that when you do that tensoring, you get A tensor B. So in other words, L is a C form of A tensor B. So I'll give an example, because this seems a little, maybe a little abstract. Then in this situation, you can say that the centroid of A, of L, is just C, basically. Okay. So the example is the twisted loop algebras, because everything we've looked at so far have just been loop algebras. The example is the twisted loop algebra. I don't know if I could squeeze this on a little bit. Where you take an automorphism of period M, you take these eigenspaces that appeared in Said's talk, and the C that you want to take is the Laurent polynomial in T to the M. Okay. So B is certainly a C module. It's a free C module with a finite basis, 1, T up to Tm minus 1. Then the example that Allison Berman and Pianzola gave that will follow from that result that I just took off is that if you look at this twisted loop algebra and look at the centroid of it, that you will get just C. So Laurent polynomials in the T to the M. Okay. And what makes this go is that in this example, so in this particular example, this algebra is a C form of A tensor B. So if you tensor this with T to the M, you'll see that you're sort of spreading out the T powers and then getting all of the T powers. And so that's why you can lift it up and get A tensor B. So that's just kind of a nice application of that result. I think it's sort of another nice Bruce Allison result with help from his friend. And I think we should congratulate Bruce, maybe toast him on the occasion. I should mention that this is orange juice. So, congratulations, Bruce. Happy birthday. More than ever.